Hello and welcome to another sccenglish.ie audio boo. This is Julian Gerdam from St. Columba's College in Dublin in Ireland, with the fourth talk on relatively minor characters in the play Hamlet. And this one deals with the fourth and the fifth characters. That might be cheating slightly, but this particular pair can only be thought of together. They are, of course, Hamlet's so-called friends, Rosencrantz and gentle Guildenstern, or perhaps rather, Guildenstern and a gentle Rosencrantz. They're certainly minor characters, but they do make a habit of popping up at important moments and important scenes. It's quite easy for them to become a comic duo, a kind of Shakespearean Laurel and Hardy or Abbott and Costello, in the way done in the excellent current National Theatre production starring Rory Kinnear. But these characters do also usefully underscore some key ideas, especially about Claudius's court. They first appear well into the play in Act 2, Scene 2, when they are summoned by the king because he is deeply concerned with Hamlet's transformation. Basically, he asks them to spy on his own stepson, and then the queen echoes this. And with syrupy sycophancy, they agree to take this on. Guildenstern says, "We both obey, and here give up ourselves in the full bent to lay our service freely at your feet to be commanded." This is their key note. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are like too many other members of Claudius's court, such as Polonius and Osric. They are yes-men. In the words of J. Alfred Prufrock in T.S. Eliot's poem, they are an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use. So they go to talk to Hamlet. At first he is delighted to see them, but fairly quickly realises they have an ulterior motive. Later, in Act 2, Scene 2, they also hear important words from Hamlet, when he says that he has lost all his mirth, and that this goodly frame, the earth, is to him but a foul and pestilent congregation of vapours, while man is a mere quintessence of dust. These words are consistent with what he has said privately in his soliloquies. What he's leaving out in public is his knowledge of his father's murder. In Act 3, Scene 3, we also hear something very useful, this time from Rosencrantz. Not surprisingly, he means his words about the singular and peculiar life of the king as pure sycophancy. But his speech early in that scene is one of the most useful in all Shakespeare's works, in showing the centrality of the king in society, and why the cess of majesty can be so catastrophic, and it's worth paying plenty of attention to it. By Act 4, Scene 2, following Polonius's death, Hamlet is treating the pair with disdain. He calls Rosencrantz a sponge that soaks up the king's countenance, his rewards, his authorities, and warns his former friends that they will eventually be spat out, a warning that, unfortunately, for their own sake, they pay no heed to. And so they get into a ship, taking Hamlet to England, unwittingly carrying the prince's death sentence. And that's the last we see of them. Not quite the last we hear of them, however. Hamlet's trickery condemns them to death, and the ever-decent Horatio, probably shocked, says, "So Guildenstern and Rosencrantz go to it," which Hamlet receives with an uncaring, "Why, man, they did make love to this employment. They are not near my conscience." And then, after the deaths of Hamlet, Gertrude, Laertes and Claudius in the final scene, we're just about to wrap up when the English ambassador turns up, admitting that our affairs from England come too late, to tell the king that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, a line famously chosen by Tom Stoppard as the title of one of his plays. It's impossible to imagine anyone in the audience feeling sorry for them. They get swept up in Hamlet's revenge, examples of the rottenness that Marcellus said pervaded the state of Denmark.